For sure, the Buddha, the emptiness of the heart, talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 5.
Beloved Dogwan, Dio set against you. Since ancient times, the enlightened ancestors appearing in the world relied just on their own fundamental experience to reveal something of what is before us. So we see them knocking chairs and raising whisks, hitting the ground and brandishing sticks, beating a drum or rolling balls. Dio continues, even though this is so, eminent Genshu, you have traveled all over and spent a long time in monasteries. Don't worry about such old calendar days as these I mentioned. Just go by the living road you see on your own, going east, going west, like a hawk sailing through the sky. In a blink of an eye, you cross over to the other side. On another occasion, Dio said to Crucio, the cause and conditions of the one great concern of the enlightened ones is not apart from your daily affairs. There is no difference between here and there. It pervades past and present, shining through the heavens, mirroring the earth. That is why it is said that everything in the last myriad eons is right in the present. We value the great spirit of a hero only in those concerned. Before any signs become distinct, before any illustration is evident, concentrate fiercely, looking, looking, coming or going, till your effort is completely right. In the moment of a thought, you attain union. The mind of birth and death is destroyed, and suddenly you clearly see your original appearance, the scene of your native land, each particular distinctly clear. You then see and hear just as the Buddhas did, know and act as the enlightened ancestors did.
Manipa. One who is interested in knowing who is he, has two ways open for him. One is that of knowledge, reading scriptures, studying old scholars, collecting as many concepts about one's being as possible. That is the cheaper way. And there was nothing wrong if it was only cheaper. It is wrong too. The other way is not to bother about others, however valuable those scriptures may be. They cannot give you even a single glimpse of your fundamental nature. 1,000 Buddhas together cannot force you to become a Buddha. It is your essential right to know your fundamental nature or not to know. You cannot be forced by teacher, by parents. Yes, they can force knowledge upon you. They can force ideologies upon you. They do force religion without understanding that a man full of ideologies becomes almost crippled to know his own nature. He is so burdened with borrowed knowledge that he cannot travel on a higher mountain. You have to drop all your weight. As high you go, even breathing becomes difficult. Even to have your clothes becomes difficult. You have to drop all weight. You have to become weightless. What is true in the mountaineering is also true in the inner world of consciousness. If you want to go in, you will have to cut through in a single blow all the knowledge that has been given to you. Just burn it. It is better to be ignorant on the path, because at least ignorance is innocent, than to be knowledgeable. Knowledgeability is the greatest hindrance to know, because you think as if you already know, but there is no as if in existence. Either you know it or you don't know it, and there is no way of communicating it through words. All words will be misunderstood. Only the presence of a living master, a wordless silence, perhaps can become a glimpse, a triggering point in you. It is not being done by the master. It happens by your receptivity, by your openness. Something clicks. There is no other word to replace the word click. Dayo is saying to Genshu, since ancient times, the enlightened ancestors appearing in the world relied just on their own fundamental experience to reveal something of what is before us. Those who have known their difficulty is that of communication. You know the taste of salt, but you cannot convey it through language. Language has limitations, and the experience of your fundamental nature is of the unlimited. To bring the unlimited to the limitations of language, is a tremendously risky task, and even though done with absolute accuracy, it is going to fail. Seeing this, the ancient masters have not relied on scriptures, have not even relied on language. They are their own authority. It does not matter whether all the scriptures of the world say something else. They know the taste of truth. Their authority is not derived from their scholarship. They are the authority unto themselves. It brings a problem because they cannot use scriptures, they cannot use ordinary means of communication, hence they have used anything that is before us. So we see them knocking chairs and raising whips, hitting the ground and brandishing sticks, beating a drum or rolling balls, anything just to wake you up. Because the question is not of teaching you a philosophical understanding. The question is of existential awakening. When for the first time the West became aware of Zen masters, they thought these people are absolutely crazy. Somebody is asking about truth and you hit him. Obviously it looked crazy, and more so that the person who is being hit, in deep gratitude, bows down and touches your feet. The West was completely puzzled when for the first time Zen books started being translated. The Western philosophers were hitting their heads. They have never heard that by slapping a man who is asking a question, you are answering. Because they had no idea that what is implied in hitting or slapping. One Zen master even threw one man from the second story to the ground from the window, who had come to ask what is truth. Not only he gave him lecture, he jumped over him and asked him, do you get? And the poor fellow has to say, yes, master. This kind of incidences were absolutely unknown outside the Zen tradition. But you have to understand it, what is implied. When a Zen master hits, he is saying you are the truth and you are asking it. Are you fiddling? You are the Buddha and you are asking, what is the Buddha? By hitting, he is saying, simply look at yourself. Rather than asking like a beggar from one place to another place, just go in and look. His hitting is a shock. In that shock, perhaps your thinking may stop. There is every possibility. You were not expecting a hit. You had come with deep humbleness, touching the feet of the master. And sometimes it has happened that the person has not even asked the question and the master has hit him. Because his very coming and touching the feet means he has some question to ask. It does not matter what question. You deserve a good hit. It is throwing you back to yourself. It is saying in existential way that you are the answer. Don't seek it anywhere. Having no other way to communicate, they devised anything that may wake you up, throw you upon yourself. Asking a question means you are putting the responsibility on the master to answer you. But his answer cannot be your answer. Nobody's answer can be your answer. Your answer has to grow within you just as any rose grows. That's what the master is saying by hitting you. That don't go anywhere, just go in. Stop asking, stop begging, because you are already in the kingdom of the Buddhas, but you have not looked in. Perhaps a good hit or as the master throwing the disciple from the window out may awaken him from his somnambulistic state in which we all are, half asleep, half awake, just on the minimum away. The major part of our being is fast asleep. According to modern psychologists, out of 10, only one part is awake. 9 are fast asleep. With this much sleep within you, it is impossible to know the truth, to know the love, to know the nature of existence. Gaya is saying that these ancient masters had to fall upon extreme methods, but the reason was simply one. In some way, to wake you up. Dayo continues, even though this is so imminent against you, you have traveled all over and spent a long time in monastery. Don't worry about such old calendar days as these I mentioned. Just go by the living roads you see on your own. He is calling all the old masters and the Buddhas and the Patriarchs, old calendars. Don't be bothered about them. Follow the living stream which you see with your own eyes. No belief, no faith, simply be clear. Zen requires the disciple clarity, intelligence, awareness, which have not been required by any other religion in the world or by any other philosopher in the world. Its requirement is absolute. Dayo says, don't worry about such old calendars. Just go by the living roads. From where your life is coming? From what point your life is arising? That is the living road. It is not outside you. You have to dig deep within yourself for the roots and for the way that connects you with the universal existence. It is simply an internal affair. Just go by the living road you see on your own. Don't ask me and don't ask anyone what is the living road. Just close your eyes and see yourself what is the living road. You are alive, that much is certain. It is certain by your questioning. you are breathing, just close your eyes and find out from where all these branches are joined to the trunk, and where are the roots hidden into the universal energy. This is the living root, and nobody can point it to you. You have to find it yourself. Just go by the living road you see on your own, going east, going west, like a hawk sailing through the sky. Don't be worried wherever it leads. Go. Finally, it will bring you to the very center of existence. In the blink of an eye, you cross over to the other side. The happening happens only in the blink of an eye. The distance between the Buddha and the no Buddha is so small, the distinction between the awake and the asleep is so small that just in a blink of eye you have already moved to the further source, to the other source. It is to be understood clearly that the road is not very long. To call it road is simply symbolic. There is no other way what to call it. It is simply a change of vision. You are looking out, you close your eyes and you look within, and you go on deepening inside as far as you can. And you are bound to find the source of your life. It is just if a rose flower was trying to find the source of his life, where he is going to find it? He will have to move withinwards in the branches towards the root. Where it is getting all the nourishment and all the life. We are also having roots, but they are invisible. Zen is nothing but a discovery of our roots. The man who knows his roots is called the Buddha. On another occasion, Dayo said to Kuso, the cause and conditions of the one great concern of the enlightened one is not apart from your daily affairs. There is no difference between here and there. It pervades past and present, shining through the heavens, mirroring the earth. That is why it is said that everything in the last myriad eons is right in the present. The past, immense past, beginningless past is behind you. But where it has gone? An immense future, eternal future, endless future is ahead of you, where it is hiding. Jain's understanding is that in the present moment, the whole past is hidden, and in the present moment, the whole future also is hidden. The present moment contains the whole universe. Past, present, future. If you can manage to understand the present moment, you have understood the whole phenomenon of eternity. Nobody was aware before Albert Einstein declared that he can make atom bombs. The atom is the smallest particle of anything. Up to Einstein, nobody has been able to split the atom. So it was thought to be the last division we can make. Further, it is impossible to cut the atom into parts. Atom is the solid entity. But Albert Einstein managed to split the atom and found that by splitting it, a tremendous energy explodes which is hiding in it. Nobody has ever conceived that in such a particle, which is not even visible to the eyes, so much energy is contained that it can destroy a big city like Hiroshima or Nagasaki within 3 minutes. It consumed both the cities, leaving behind only traces, ruins. Skeletons. I have been sent by a friend a picture of a small girl who must be going from the bottom floor to the first floor carrying his her book to do some homework. She was just on the steps in the middle, and the atom bomb fell on Hiroshima. Everything was burned within 3 minutes. He has sent me the picture of the girl. She is burned with her book and remained stuck to the wall, just a skeleton. A small bag in which she was going to do the homework. Just as atom was unknown, and now we have gone hundreds of years ahead of Albert Einstein. Now we are not only able to divide the atom, we can divide the divisions of atoms. Those divisions of atoms carry even bigger power sources. Condensed, the same is true about the moment of time. It contains all past and all future, and of course the present. So the man who is meditating forgets all the past, drops all longings for the future. It is enough to know the present. By knowing it, by entering into its complexities, you will be knowing the whole universe. And when you reach to your life source, that too is atomic, an individual life source. But it has to be connected with the universe some way, otherwise you cannot live. Once you have found your life source, you have found the way. Just in a blink of eye, you are on the other shore. You have entered into the universal existence. Zen perhaps is the only scientific approach to a religious experience. We value the great spirit of a hero only in those concerns before any science becomes distinct, before any illustration is evident, concentrate fiercely, looking, coming or going till your effort is completely right. All is hidden in the looking, in the watching, in the seeing. So fiercely that your whole energy is concentrated then existence cannot remain a mystery to you. In that concentration, you become right and you deserve that all the mysteries should be open to you. In the moment of a thought, you attain union. Just in a moment. Once you have reached your life source, then it is only a question of just a moment, a blink of eye, and you have found the union with existence. The mind of birth and death is destroyed, and suddenly you clearly see your original appearance, the scene of your native land, each particular distinctly clear. You then see and hear just as the Buddha did, know and act as the enlightened ancestors did. Knowing the source of your life and taking a quantum leap in a blink of eye to the other source, is the union with the whole, the cosmos. After this union, you behave like a Buddha. You cannot do otherwise. Your actions, your gestures, your words are your silences. Your movements are your no movements. Will have the same quality as that of any Buddha. All Buddhas participate into the same cosmic soul. Zen is not in search of any god. Its search can be said to be the union. Union with the whole. And the union makes you really all that is, has been, will be. Nothing is left out of the whole. And you become one with it. The first missionaries who had come to Japan to convert people to Christianity were amazed by the Zen master. When they came across a Zen master, because others told them that you don't bother us. You just transform a certain Zen master whom I have loved. If he changes to Christianity, even if he goes to hell, I am ready to go with him. But don't bother with me. You just change that Zen master. And missionaries approach the Zen master with their gospel, and the Zen masters laughed and they said, "You don't understand religion at all." And you are converting people into religion. You don't have that taste yourself. One missionary was very much angry. He opened the Bible and read the Sermon on the Mount. It is a beautiful sermon. And was thinking that now, let us see what this fellow says. After 3-4 lines, the Zen master said, "Shut up." I can say only this much, that this guy, whoever has written these lines, will become a Buddha sometime in future. He's on the path. That much I can certainly, that someday he will become a Buddha. But don't take it seriously, because you also will become one day a Buddha. And remember, for becoming a Buddha, Buddhism is not necessary. That was the great approach, that for becoming a Buddha, Buddhism is not necessary. Nothing is necessary. The Buddha is already asleep in you. Just some situations in which he can be awakened. All Zen monasteries were doing only one thing, creating situations so that the Buddha is awake. It is not something to which you are converted. It is your own nature. The Christian missionaries were at a loss. Because these Zen masters never talked about God, they said, "What is the point? You don't know even yourself, and you are talking about God. And who has seen God? And what you will do even if you meet him?" It will be a very awkward situation. God is standing before you. you will find yourself in a very weird space. What to do now? I have told you the story of Rabindranath Tagore. In his one of the best poems he has written, he says, I have seen God many times, but he was always far away by the side of a star. I followed, but by the time I reached there, he has moved to some other place far away. It has been going on and on for life together. Finally, I reached the place, the house on which was written on the door, here lives the Lord of the world, Father God. He was just going to knock and became suddenly aware that just think twice. What you are going to do if you meet him? You are not prepared at all. And after meeting him, there is nothing to do. Your whole life has been structured in searching for God. You know how to search. You know how to fast. You know how to pray. But you don't know, when you have met God, there is no point in fasting, and there is no point in searching, and there is no point in prayer. What you are going to do? You will be suffocated. Seeing the situation, he took his spoon in his hand out of fear that when he goes back down the steps he may hear the sound of the spoon and he may open the door and say, where are you going? And then he ran away as fast as he could. And the poem has a tremendous beauty. It says, since then I am again searching and I know where he is, so I avoid only that place. And I go on searching, because in searching there is so much joy. And I am thought to be a great saint, and I am enjoying the great adventure of searching God. There's only one thing I have to remember, not to reach to that place again. But the whole world is available to search except that house. Zen has never bothered about God. Neither it has said anything against God. That is a very strange situation to understand, because either people believe in God or people do not believe. But Jain is simply unconcerned. There is no question of belief or no belief. It simply puts God out of the way. It is unnecessary luggage. It has taken the only essential point, that is the source of your life. Just go deepening on that road so that you can reach to the final transformation from individual to the universal. Just before his death, Vasudeva turned to the crowd that had gathered around and said in a loud voice, "Look straight ahead. What is there? If you see it as it is, you will never err." He is talking about inside. It is his last word. He is saying, look straight forward. He is not telling anybody, he is simply saying to himself. Look straight ahead. What is there? Just the pure clarity, a silent sky, an eternal silence. If you see it as it is, without any preconceived ideas, without any religions and philosophies, just as it is, you will never err. You will never commit a mistake. You will reach directly like an arrow and hit the moon. Zen's concern is absolutely you. You in your original nature. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, is it because you speak from your own fundamental experience that your words spontaneously impress one as true, as unequivocal common sense, even though the listener may not have had such experience? From the first sentence of yours that I ever read, before I could have developed the eyes and ears of love, there was no decision to choose to accept that you were right. You simply were, whether it suited me or not. I just don't get it. How is it that others could possibly feel otherwise?" Manisha, one can speak on the authority of others, but then his words are dead corpses. Are dry roses you may find in holy Bibles. But when someone speaks on his own experience, It is a living phenomenon. You may agree with it, you may not agree. But it leaves an impact on you that you had been in contact with someone who knows. I am not authoritarian, but I am an authority. And you have to understand the difference between the two. The authoritarian is always within quotation marks. He is the greatest scholar. You cannot dispute with him. His argument is very valid, supported by the scripture. His authoritarian attitude is derived from scriptures, the past, others' experiences. I am not authoritarian, but certainly I am the authority. I say only that which I know. And because I say only that which I know, you may agree with it or not, it does not matter. Its truth rings a bell in your heart. And whenever something rings a bell in your heart, don't listen to the mind. The mind may not agree. Listen to the heart, because the heart knows better. The heart is ancient. The mind is a very recent development. And the mind's development is from the outside experiences. The heart knows something of the inner. It knows nothing of the outer. So when your heart rings a bell, whether your mind agrees with it or not, don't be worried. You are very close to the truth. If any person's presence simply overwhelms you, that is the only intimate communion between a disciple and a master. That is the only way how the disciple decides that he has found his master. He is overwhelmed. He is surrounded by the master's presence from all sides. The mind may be freaking out, because mind is always afraid of being overwhelmed by someone. The mind is basically egoistic. And to be overwhelmed means the ego will be gone like a shadow. Mind is afraid of truth. Mind is afraid of reality. Because mind consists of all kinds of illusions, lies. Truth will expose it. Hence it avoids the truth. But you are fortunate, Manisha, if your heart says that you have found a man who is speaking on his own authority, then a revolution is possible in your very life too. And that revolution is happening day by day. It is not something that it stops. It goes on happening until you are completely burnt and dissolved. And that fortunate moment will also come. It is not very far. This is a good beginning. Before you enter into the living way inward, don't forget to come back again. I am always afraid of Sardar Gurdayal Singh. I have even ordered a grave to be ready made. Because someday somebody may not come back. And Sardar Gurdayal Singh is standing in the queue almost close, very close. He will laugh and simply go away. We will celebrate. And he knows it, that there is no need to be worried. But he goes on coming back because one never knows what joke I am going to share. And I will miss him also. Because he is the only man in the whole world who laughs before the joke is said. Such trust. It's very difficult to find. But I warn you all, go deep, but don't go too too much. When Nibbidhanu gives the call to come back, be a good boy. Jesus and Peter are sipping their iced tea while sunbathing on the shore of Lake Galilee. A group of children nearby start throwing rocks in the water. They laugh and shout and kick up the sand. His peace completely destroyed, Peter sits up. "Hey, you kids," he barks at them, "you get out of here." But Jesus pushes up his Ray-Ban sunglasses, wipes the sand off his free face and says, "No, Peter, let the children come unto me." 5 minutes later, the noise is deafening as screaming kids is splashing water and flying sand fill the air. Peter, hung over from last night's wine, gets totally pissed off. "I said, you kids, just get the hell out of here," he screams. But again Jesus sits up, wipes the sand off himself, raises his hand and says, "Peter, I told you, let the children come unto me so that I can kick their little asses." Klopsky is sitting with Schemer at the Dancing Duck pub, sipping his beer. "Hey, Schemer," says the Polak, "how do you do so well with the girls?" "Easy," says Schemer, "you have to be sophisticated. And you have to have a gimmick." "Sophisticated is easy," says Klopsky, swallowing down his tenth beer. "But what is gimmick?" "Well," replies Stamos, "for example, I have painted a white circle on the dashboard of my car. The girl usually asks me what it means. Then I very casually explain that it stands for purity. The conversation generally turns to abstract white things like virginity. From there it is easy to talk them into it." "Okay," says Klopsky, "I think I got it." The next evening Klopsky paints a white circle on the dashboard of his car and then goes to pick up his date, Lucy. "That is rather unusual, having a white circle on your desk," says Lucy to Klopsky. "Yes, it is, replies Klopski, thinking quickly as he adjusts his tie. Do you wanna fuck? You are drunk. Spouse the barman of the groggy doggy pub. Ed Paddy, who just has slipped slowly onto the floor again. I'm not drunk at all, insists Paddy, picking himself up. In fact, I'm not even drink a little bit, and I will prove it to you. Now you see that cat just coming in the door? Well, it has only got one eye. You are drunker than I thought, says the barman. The cat is going out. Close your eyes, feel your body to be completely frozen. Look inward, straight to the very source of your life. Go deeper, without any fear. Only this way one has found himself as a Buddha. This is the only living line, the only living road that leads you to your cosmic home, without hesitation, go on, go on. gather all the experience of silence the bliss and the benediction to make it more clear. Nividana, relax, watch your mind and body separate from you. You are only a watcher. This point of being a watcher is the Buddha. Recognize your Buddha nature. It is just a mirror reflecting everything but unaffected. Nothing leaves a mark on your watching. The mirror remains empty. This emptiness can any moment take a quantum leap. And you will find yourself on the other shore. Just in a split second, you can be one with the whole. This union is the authentic goal of religiousness. A beautiful evening. Unfortunately, how many are capable to enjoy it? So few. But we have to spread this fire, cool, silence, just like a breeze around the globe. this silence is going to become the womb for the new man to be born. You prepare the way. Nivedan now, come back, but come back like Buddha, with great dignity, with grace, with silence, and sit down for a few moments, just gathering, remembering, collecting the experience of your silent moment. You have to remain a Buddha 24 hours. It is not an action, it is your nature. It has to be expressed in all your actions, in your words, in your silences, in your songs, in your dances, but you remain the watcher, the Buddha. Mahita?
Yes.
Can we celebrate all the Buddhas?
Yes, sir.